Welcome to Planning Matters with Fiduciary Trust. I'm Brian Kirk, our Director of Estate and Financial Planning. And I'm here today with Jeff Finkelman. Jeff is a Managing Director in our Sustainable Investing Practice. He is a former Peace Corps volunteer. He is also a CFA, Certified Financial Analyst. And the thing I like most about Jeff is he's somebody who probably, in a practical sense, knows more about sustainable investing, ESG investing, impact investing, flexible capital, the whole range of terminology that's used, but actually how it's really implemented in the field, from integrating it into just our normal investment process to going out and finding dedicated projects for clients interested in having really specific impacts, both from a financial standpoint and for other values that are in the play. And Jeff, thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sustainable ESG investing has been in the news a lot. I know, it's gotten into the political winds over the last several years. I know I've sat through plenty of talks and lectures talking about, what exactly it is, different types of sustainable investing. And I'd love to sort of take a different track with you, just because you actually do it so much and in a number of different ways, and focus on that actual doing of sustainable investing, what it actually involves, how you get to it, and specifically for our individual clients out there that we work with. A lot of this focuses on pension plans and institutional investing, but I'm really interested in how this works with individuals. And maybe we could just start there and describe for me, who are, folks who are interested in ESG sustainable investing? How would you pick them out in a crowd if that's even possible? If you could, say, for people who are listening out there, how would they know, this is something they should continue to listen to or even be thinking about? How would you approach that question?
Sure. It's a good question. And I think it's an important one, because I think the field overall, is replete with all kinds of different labels and varying definitions. But it is important to think about really why, you as an investor would want to pursue sustainable investing, or why you do pursue sustainable investing. And that really helps you figure out what kinds of sustainable investing make the most sense for you. So I think in terms of who's actually making these investments, it really is a very diverse array of investors. And the motivations, I think you can kind of categorize them by motivation. I think there certainly are sustainable investors that are focused on impact. They're making investments because they want to, potentially both generate a return, but really they're looking at their investments as a way to have some kind of social or environmental impact, or achieve some kind of social or environmental objective. But not all sustainable investing fits into that category. There are other investors, I think, who look at it as, an opportunity to align their portfolios with their values. So they may not think of their investments as necessarily, saving the world, so to speak, but they just feel more comfortable owning companies or projects or whatever it might be, different assets that are consistent with their worldview, with their values. And then the last category I'd say is, really, sustainable investing can be relevant for investors who only care about financial return and who are not interested in anything else. I should say risk-adjusted financial return, getting adequately compensated for the risk that you take in pursuing opportunities. And sustainable investing can be relevant for those investors as well, looking at environmental and social and governance factors from a risk and opportunity perspective, as they evaluate prospective investment opportunities. So I think as you look at the landscape, you can kind of place investors into one of those three buckets. Some are doing all three, but generally that's how it kind of shakes out. And that would apply both to institutions and the way they are approaching things, as well as individuals or families.
Yeah, no, I like that, because, it puts me, I could be caring about whatever the value or interest that's driving me for different reasons, and what matters, it seems, just, you know, do I care about this, right? Do I have, you know, let's just use a sustainable environmental goal. I could be doing that because I want it to be, have that environmental impact. I could do it because I want to just sort of get my, you know, alignment, you know, of what I'm doing, my investment lined up with it. Or I could just be doing it because I think it's good investing, right? Yeah. And what about asset thresholds? You know, do I need to have, you know, I don't know, $100 million to be thinking about doing this? Do I need $1 million? Do I need $10 million? Do I need $100,000? You know, is there sort of an asset threshold where somebody should be in the room or not in the room?
I wouldn't say there's any hard and fast rules about that. Sustainable investments, you know, can be found across every asset class and for every size of investor. I will say that the, you know, investors that have are on the lower end of the asset range are more likely to find opportunities in public markets and fixed income, but also cash. Whereas the, you know, so much of the impact investing as a specific kind of category of sustainable investments, where you're really, you know, trying to invest in clean energy or microfinance or things like that, you're probably more likely to find those opportunities in private markets, private equity, venture capital, private real estate, those kinds of asset classes. And those do have higher asset thresholds, both from a regulatory perspective in terms of, you know, meeting certain standards for access to private vehicles, but also from a portfolio management perspective, having, you know, enough assets that you can allocate appropriately to private investments. So those tend to be clients that are much larger and can accommodate these into an alternatives allocation. But there really are opportunities across the spectrum.
Yeah, no, again, I like that. You know, there's, you know, like most things, you know, if you have more capital to play, there's more options for you, but it doesn't mean there's not options if you don't have that capital, right?
Yep, that's right.
So let's go back to sort of client goals, client perspectives, because that seems to really be the driver. I know you work with a lot of folks trying to discern what those goals or perspectives are. How do you do that work? What's your process to help bring that out for someone to figure out what they're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, and just to emphasize, I think it's really important to go through a process at the beginning of, you know, for a client or an investor that's interested in sustainable investing, to take the time to really think through what it is that you want to accomplish. Because I think what we've certainly seen is sometimes there's a lot of excitement around sustainable investing, and people will just kind of jump right in, and they end up realizing that, well, you know, maybe I have a strategy that's screening out fossil fuels in one part of my portfolio, but I own fossil fuels in another part of my portfolio, and it becomes kind of a mess. So it's important to have a plan. You know, the process that we have is, it's really a discussion and a conversation, I think, and just working with clients to talk through a series of questions to understand their motivation. Why are they interested in sustainable investing? If there are, you know, if they're motivated for values alignment, really trying to write out what those values are, what are the you know, as they think about their portfolio, what are the things that they do want to own? What are the things they absolutely don't want to own? What would make them, you know, sleep comfortably at night when thinking about their portfolio? You know, I think talking with clients about the, you know, how they view their assets, what role it should play in generating some kind of impact. Do they, you know, some clients are really focused on innovation and view innovation as a way to generate impact. Others want to use their capital to scale existing solutions. So there's some discussion you can have around what type of approach, you know, you want to take. So we have kind of a series of questions that we work with clients to talk through, and it ultimately yields something we call a sustainable investing strategy statement, which is akin to an investment policy statement. So just like you are laying out your asset allocation and you're setting, you know, specifying your risk parameters and your liquidity needs. The sustainable investing strategy statement is all about, you know, doing the same thing for your sustainability objectives. What screens do you want to implement? What impact issue areas do you want to target? But spelling it out very clearly so you have a plan going forward. You can always iterate. You can always come back to it and change it as you learn. But it's important to have a starting point.
Yeah, I'm guessing that the statement that you put together, you know, helps people stay the course, just like an investment policy statement does, because, you know, the like most things with investing, you know, the idea may sound great, but the road itself is often bumpy, right? And having that statement, I imagine, allows you to, you know, have that reference point, you know, tell people you've gone through the work and then, you know, not vary from it, or make the process, you know, part of it before you, you know, go vary and say, hey, that was a bad decision I made. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's helpful in anticipating trade-offs, because I think we often say, I mean, I say it a lot, but the industry does more broadly, my peers in the industry as well, that you don't have to sacrifice returns for impact or for values alignment. And I think that is true. I should say it's possible, but it's maybe not always true. You know, just the basics of financial theory, you know, investment theory will tell you that if you exclude certain kinds of companies from your investment universe, you're going to deviate from, you know, your benchmark. Your investment opportunity set is smaller, so you have to anticipate that you're going to have more deviation from the benchmark. And so there may be quarters where you're down and the benchmark is up, or vice versa. And you need to think ahead about that. Just as one example, you know, if you're laying out exclusions, to think through, okay, what are the consequences of doing this? And am I prepared to endure those if there's a lot of deviation, or, you know, whatever that trade-off might be, to think ahead about that and calibrate things appropriately.
Yeah, and I can imagine if your reasoning is a little bit muddled, where it's like, well, I want this a little bit for investing, and I want a little bit for, you know, my sustainable goal, and I haven't really gone through the process of sorting those two things out, that when you start having those deviations, that's probably not the place that you want to be sorting out your sort of muddled rationale, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a different conversation when things, you know, when things get tough and you haven't really anticipated it. Of course, that can always happen, but it's best to have a plan and try to think ahead about it.
Yeah, that's great. So I imagine when you're going through that exercise, you know, part of your goal is trying to, you know, map somebody into some, you know, define categories of types of investing that they could be engaged in. How does that work? Maybe what are some of the types of strategies you may be, you know, driving someone into based on, you know, the feedback you get going through that conversation with them?
Sure. So there, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can go, and so I won't go through all of them, but maybe just to highlight a couple, general categories. I would say, with clients that are really focused on values alignment, you know, we do tend to suggest the use of establishing some screens for their investment portfolio. So again, identifying things they don't want to own, and maybe using a customized index replication provider that can build a customized portfolio that minimizes the deviation from the benchmark, but still allows them to exclude tobacco or gambling or whatever it might be that they don't want to own. For those that are more, you know, interested in environmental, social, and governance analysis as a way of improving their risk return profile, you know, there's certainly an argument to be made that ESG analysis can be a driver of performance. We tend to look for active investment managers in public markets, you know, listed equities or fixed income, but also other asset classes, where they're evaluating underlying companies, not just for their, you know, their market share or their competitive positioning or, you know, their growth prospects, but also how well are they treating their employees? What kind of community relations do they have? What's their environmental footprint? All as a way to assess their, you know, to add some additional perspective around that financial analysis, and ultimately the goal of improving the risk return profile. So that would push you more into an active manager typically. And then I'd say impact investing is where I do spend a lot of my time. And there it's about, if a client is interested in climate change, it's looking for different kinds of climate investment opportunities in venture capital or in private equity or in real assets, investing in solar infrastructure or things like that. So finding ways to bring those managers into their portfolio so they can be contributing, achieve their goal of contributing to climate solutions. So it all depends on kind of what the client is looking for, what their objectives are, and then trying to then match it up to opportunities.
Yeah, so those special projects sound kind of interesting. So I'm going to prod a little bit there. Give me an example of one of those sort of more impact-oriented special projects that you've worked on, helping find something really particular for a client. What does that look like?
Sure. So I guess climate change is a good place to start or focus on. We've had a number of clients that have been interested in climate generally, but also agriculture and sustainable agriculture. So my colleague did what we call a landscape review, where she assessed basically the investment landscape of sustainable agriculture opportunities. And the goal of these research projects is to understand what is the impact that comes from sustainable agriculture? What are we trying to achieve from an impact perspective? What are the different strategies that are being employed to improve the environmental and social footprint of agriculture? And then how does that map to risk and return? Where's the right balance between impact and generating a competitive risk and return? And it was an interesting project. What she found is that from an impact perspective, really the goal is to move towards a more regenerative type of agriculture, where you're not just growing crops, but you have animal husbandry, and it becomes a more circular kind of ecosystem. You reduce the amount of inputs you're using. You pay a lot of attention to soil health. There's a whole host of approaches you can do to make your farming practices regenerative. The problem is that regenerative is a concept that is very loosely defined, and there's no supply chain. If you think about organic, there's an organic label on the pasta or the vegetables you buy at the grocery store, and that connects you all the way back to the farming practices. But for regenerative, that doesn't exist. So from a risk return perspective, the investment opportunity for regenerative is more of a below market opportunity, perhaps helping to build the market. And that may be appropriate for some clients, but ultimately what we found was that we found a manager that invests in organic farmland, or I should say farmland that can transition to organic. There's an existing market for that. The risk return opportunity is there. The organic market is has a lot of growth potential. And there's a fair amount of environmental benefit. And this manager does try to introduce regenerative practices into their land, both for environmental reasons, but also as a potential to improve the quality and yield of what they grow. But that was a good example where we tried to balance the need to deliver and generate competitive investment returns, but also satisfy an impact mandate.
Yeah, and it sounds like in that situation, that's somebody who's got to be willing to take some risk on the financial side of things, not necessarily sacrificing the financial perspective, but willing to take some risk there in order to have that impact, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But we did look at it from, are you getting compensated for that risk? And I would mm-hmm. say that our assessment was that by investing in an organic transition strategy, you are taking on the risk of transitioning land to organic, because it's a 3-year process. And so while your land is transitioning, your yield is likely to drop, but you can't sell your products with an organic label because it hasn't yet been certified. So their whole strategy is around structuring the leases that they lease the land to farmers just, you know, structuring their lease so that they could get the benefit of the upside once the land is certified as organic, capture the premiums that come from selling organic produce, or in this case, row crops, so it's more grain. But then, you know, that's compensation for the risk they take during that transition period of essentially capitalizing that transition process. So the strategy and the structure of the leases gave us comfort that you are getting compensated for the risk, but you're right, it is a riskier strategy than if you just bought conventional farmland. There's no transition required. You know, it's just not as risky, but the return, you know, maybe is not quite as high. So
that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting, because even in the, you know, what I initially perceived, which was, well, I wouldn't take that risk unless I had that impact goal, you're still looking at that risk and trying to make it make financial sense, or at least make sure that you're getting compensated for it, which is interesting. Do you have do you ever encounter situations where sort of maybe the opposite occurs, where you have folks who aren't looking to have, you know, particular impact or, you know, sustainable goals, but when you're doing the financial, you know, analysis, you realize that they end up in that space, you know, just from the, you know, from just doing the normal investment analysis?
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. You know, I would say that I spend most of my time with clients that are very motivated to be sustainable investors, are really interested in the space. But we do, I do recall one, you know, one example where, and this goes back to ESG investing and the idea that that ESG can be a source of sort of an edge when you're investing. One of my colleagues who leads our equity research was talking with a client who has in the past expressed a lot of skepticism about sustainable investing, and has been pretty explicit about saying, I don't really want to hear about, you know, these ESG or impact funds. But we have a manager who's been on our platform for a long time, who's it's a global equity manager that's kind of synonymous with ESG. But they're very quality focused managers. So they look for companies that have very strong competitive positions. They, you know, have strong cultures, you know, good human resources, you know, a lot of attributes that you look for from just a quality perspective. And our lead equity research analyst presented this to this client, and, you know, didn't shy away from the ESG, but really just made the point that their use of ESG, which is fully integrated into their process, was an enhancement. It enhanced their view of quality. It enhanced their ability to pick, you know, the right kinds of companies, and ultimately convinced this client who didn't want to have anything to do with ESG that it was a good investment, and they ultimately moved forward because it just made investment sense. So it does happen. You know, it's for the certain kinds of strategies. Again, I think this is why motivation really matters. This client would not have considered a strategy if we said, well, you know, this is a good strategy, but they're really doing this because they want to save the world. You know, that wouldn't have gone very far. But because this was about financial materiality, it ultimately made the grade.
Yeah, and I like that. I mean, just listening to you, there's a little bit of edge in that conversation. But, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, what you're describing just sounds like, you know, a lot of good common sense, a lot of good analysis. You know, being really focused on what really matters for an individual, and then trying to align those things, not terribly politicized. So I'm curious how you view sort of all the headline news and, you know, political back and forth. You know, how does it impact, you know, sort of the day-to-day of what you do, or how clients look at it, or should be looking at it? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, I'm saddened that it's come to this point, that ESG and sustainable investing and impact investing has become a political football, another source of division. Because you know, again, I think it, each investor can approach this, you know, for whatever motivation they have. And there is the industry has spent a lot of time. It used to be that sustainable investing was really focused, if not limited, to exclusionary screening. It was all about, you know, getting rid of different companies or industries from an investment portfolio. So that's going back to the 90s. I mean, even earlier than that. But the industry has done a lot of work to try and move, not say that that's not applicable for some investors, but really move beyond just excluding into more of a positive and constructive view of environmental and social and governance factors, to really integrate it into investment analysis, and really focus on financial materiality. So this backlash is disappointing, because I think a lot of sustainable investors would say, hey, wait a minute, you know, we don't have an agenda. Our goal here really is to enhance risk and return. And they would point to, you know, all the data that shows that, you know, the energy transition is happening, and it's something that you have to take account of, that consumer preferences are demonstrating, you know, an interest in companies that are more sustainable, that their products are more sustainable. There's a lot of tailwinds behind some of these factors. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think what I hope will come out of this, and what I think the sustainable investing industry should learn from this, is that clearly the communication has not been good. There's so much confusion about labels and terms and definitions and motivations. And so I think the industry does need to do a better job about clarifying what we mean when we say sustainable investing, when we use a term like ESG. I mean, there's a lot of talk about moving away from that term and being more granular, being more specific. And I think that's ultimately going to be healthy. I don't view this politicization, this debate, as something that's going to really slow down this trend, I guess, or this movement towards a sustainable perspective. I think that's gonna remain, but the language we use and how we talk about it might change.
Yeah, and well, I always think about it, you know, something like word sustainable can become politicized in itself, so it takes on its own meaning that people just attach to it. But then, if you know, just go back to the dictionary and look it up. If you said, you know, do you want to do investing that's either sustainable or the opposite, you know, not sustainable? I think most people would say, well, I think I'm in the sustainable investing camp, right?
That's right. Yep. I agree.
A lot of people also, they sometimes link sustainable investing with philanthropy, as if, you know, you got to be, you know, a philanthropist to be engaged with sustainable investing, or you only do sustainable investing, you know, with your, you know, charitable assets. I'm guessing you don't see that linkage as, you know, necessarily, you know, has to be there. I'm wondering how you see those two things working together, sustainable investing and philanthropy.
Sure. So I do think there's a link. I think the link really comes when you're talking about impact investing. And so this is a type of sustainable investing where your investment is made not just for the purpose of generating a financial return, although that's an important component of it, but also for the purpose of generating some kind of positive social or environmental impact. And so when you think about impact investing and philanthropy, you know, we would really view them as part of the same spectrum of capital. Again, with the motivation of having an impact. If you make an impact investment, you make a grant, your motivation, you have different motivations in terms of financial return, but you know, arguably have the same motivation in terms of generating impact. So where we think the connection lies is, I think, really in that initial discussion that you have with an investor, or that an investor has, you know, with themselves and thinking through what they want to achieve. Thinking about what role capital, different types of capital, can play in generating change. There are, you know, impact investing, if you go back to microfinance, for instance, as kind of the original form of impact investing, that was an approach that really said, you know, if we want to improve, if we want to solve poverty, that was really the original motivation. Rather than just handing out grants, you know, this is a business-oriented way of lifting people out of poverty, is giving them microloans. Mm-hmm. That's a tool that you can use to address poverty. There's a lot of other tools, obviously, that are needed both philanthropic and policy driven, but impact investing was one tool in the toolkit. And I think it's, you know, the same way of thinking about it today, that you have a spectrum of capital. There may be some problems that can have a somewhat of a return driven solution or business oriented solution. Other problems may really need more of a philanthropic grant driven approach. And so I think it's tempting to think about these two in completely separate buckets, but ultimately we think it's helpful to have a conversation that includes both of them as possibilities for executing on a plan. The other quick linkage I would make is that for values-driven investing. So if you think about sustainable investing as, you know, if you're motivated to really align your portfolio with your values, those values that might determine how you position your portfolio, what you will own and what you won't own, those are likely to be the very same values that underlie your philanthropic work. So as you talk about or think about what values should drive your philanthropic work, there's no reason that those discussions shouldn't also inform the way your investment portfolio is managed. You have the ability to make, you know, again, trade-offs and think through trade-offs of how do my values balance against my investment needs, my investment objectives. But that conversation about values can have as much relevance to your investment portfolio as it does to your philanthropic endeavors.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. And I think that's a great point for us to sort of wrap up, because you brought us back to the beginning of, you know, identifying your motivations and values. And if you're somebody who's doing a lot of charitable work, no reason why you couldn't also be bringing those values to any investing that you're doing, right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, thank you for joining us. Anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to mention?
I don't think so. You know, I guess I would just encourage folks to also do their own research. And certainly we have pieces we've published on the fiduciary website that talk about some of these issues and hopefully can serve as a resource to folks who are interested in this. But yeah, just wishing everybody the best of luck with it.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of Planning Matters with Fiduciary Trust. Like Jeff mentioned, there are resources on our website. There's a link to an article by Jeff in our show notes for those who are interested. And again, thank you for joining us. Have a great rest of your day.